Hello and welcome to the Domestic Cricket Podcast, where we discuss the latest news, big stories, player movements, fixtures results, classic matches, and of course, interviews with domestic and international cricketers. So if you're a fan of the Sheffield Shield, One Day Cup, or a cricket fan in general, you'll love this podcast. I'm your co-host, Caleb Bland. Along with Sam Fitzgibbon, we hope you enjoy this episode. I'm your host for today's episode, Caleb Bland. Today's episode is episode 6 of the 2020-2021 domestic cricket season, domestic cricket podcast. That's a mouthful. Today we'll be going through round 3's results as well as our usual segments. So sit back, relax and enjoy. Now as we take a look around the grounds, a lot of you would have been following round 3 Sheffield Shield action, whether you're a Sheffield Shield and domestic cricket fanatic or not, because it's hard to remember a more exciting round in Sheffield Shield in recent history. We had Marcus Harris and Will Prokofsky break the record set by the War Brothers in 1990 for the highest ever Sheffield Shield partnership, which they ended up getting 464 in the opening stand after the Redbacks were bowled out for a measly 200. So it showed that the Glenelg wicket really had some batting and bowling qualities, which is what we wanted to see. In fact, all the wickets this round could not have been better, and the MCG should be taking some pointers as they look to host a Boxing Day test coming up very soon. Obviously, in recent years, their pitch has been very lifeless, but tell you what, these Adelaide curators are doing a fantastic job. So, looking at the South Australia Redbacks v Victoria match, what a match it was. South Australia opened the batting, scoring 200. No one really got going. They needed to against this Victorian side, who were coming off an extended break. So, the Bush Rangers were ready and raring to go. The only one that really made valuable runs was Henry Hunt, with 50 of 108 opening for the Redbacks in the first innings. Harry Nielsen also provided 40 runs, along with Wes Agar batting at number 10, scoring 41 of 44, helping them get to 200. And then came Marcus Harris and Will Prokofsky, both pushing, obviously after those innings, both pushing for test match places. And it's hard to see Marcus Harris being out of the vacant opener position equations with Joe Burns underperforming significantly compared to Marcus Harris's 239 off 399. Will Prokofsky finished 255 not out off just 386, going at 66 with his strike rate. Peter Hanscom made 33 and Nick Maddison made 22 off 9. It was very funny coming out on day 3, just finishing at lunch. They were close to declaring. First ball, Nick Maddison gets bowled after scoring 22 quick runs. First ball after lunch gets bowled and they declare after one ball in the second session. And then came South Australia. No one really thought they had it in them to play for this draw. But I tell you what, Travis Head, his form continues, scoring 151 off 296. Henry Hunt, once again showing how quality the young batsman is for the Redbacks, scoring 80 off 278, striking at only 28, but it's exactly what they needed, holding up one end of the crease and really putting the pressure back on the Victorians to get those wickets. And Liam Scott scoring 61 off 162, and Harry Nielsen scoring another 40 odd with 43 off 113. And the match ended in a draw, but I'll tell you what, I don't think many would be too disappointed with a draw. It was a fantastic match, opening the Sheffield Shield season at the Glenelg ACH Group Stadium. Moving on to the second match of a round, the Western Australian side took on the Tasmanian Tigers at Gladys Elphick Park, also known as Park 25, in what was another thrilling match. Western Australia were in all sorts of trouble. I think they were 5 for about 40 or 45, something around there. They were in all sorts of trouble. The Tassie fast bowls ripping through the top order, other than Sean Marsh, who's 115 off 242 in the Warriors' first innings, got them to a valuable 302 runs. Contributing was Cameron Gannon batting at number 10, the USA bowler, as well as last year's Sheffield Shield leading wicket taker, scoring 58 off just 72. Josh Inglis scored 51 off just 67, and no one else made any valuable runs other than Aaron Hardy with 26. Tasmania then went on to bat, and it was a fantastic batting display. Everyone making starts. It's quite unbelievable. No one made single digits. Charlie Wakeham scored 43, opening the batting. Matthew Wade scored 83 off 159, cementing his spot in the Aussie side. Ben McDermott scoring 90 off 220. Nathan Ellis batting at 9, scoring 41 off 88. And Peter Siddle 29 not out. And Jackson Bird batting at 11, 39 off 19 balls. Now, you know you've got a strong batting lineup if Jackson Bird's batting at 11. And then, so they had the 130-run lead and were looking to get some very early wickets, but WA did not let that happen. Cameron Bancroft scoring 104 off 222. Sam Whiteman joining him in as the opening partnership put on plenty of runs. Whiteman scoring 118. Sean Marsh backed up his first innings score with a 88 off just 74. Cameron Green, 36 off 51. Darcy Short finishing 57, not out of 59. They declared 5 for 436 with a tremendous run rate. And Tasmania, well, you know, they could have gone for the runs. They required 227 off the last 39 overs of the day in the final session. But they came out after tea, deciding they were going to go for the draw, which... it's a bit boring, boring way to end a fantastic match, but probably the right decision in the end. Matthew Wade scoring 57 not out, Ben McDermott and Charlie Wakeham both scoring 28 as they finished 2 for 117 and the match finished in a draw. Now, we've already had some excitement, but leading into the final match, which was live on Fox Sports, a State of Origin clash at Karen Rolton Oval between the New South Wales Blues and the Queensland Bulls could not be more exciting. It was a fantastic match, and, you know, there's just so many standout performances in this round of Sheffield Shield, so many cases made for the Australian team, and, you know, it's going to be hard for the selectors. They can't overlook these performances. Queensland were bowled out for 298 in their first innings. Marnus Labuschagne, he's just unstoppable, whether he's playing for Australia or for Queensland or the Heat. He just manages to find ways to make runs. He scored 117 off 203. Jimmy Pearson, the Queensland keeper, scoring 66 off 124. And no one else made any notable runs other than Joe Burns, 29 at the top of the order. Which, you know, for someone who is probably in the position where his spot in the Australian Test side isn't exactly cemented, he needed to make more runs with the India series coming up very soon. In the wickets, Mitch Starc managed to take 4, with Conway, Abbott and Copeland taking 2 each. And New South Wales then batted, failed to make up the runs, bowled out for 283. Everyone making starts in the top 7 batsmen. Daniel Hughes made 43, Nick Larkin 24, Curtis Patterson 23, Moses Henriquez 23, Dan Stolway 23, Peter Neville 59, and Sean Abbott 66 off 77, a fantastic innings which managed to get them closer to the Queensland target. Mitch Swepson took 5 for 97, showing that he really is Australia's second spinning option. Queensland went in to bat with a 15-run lead and couldn't capitalise on it, with only Renshaw and Khawaja making 42 and 41 respectively, being bowled out for 190, setting the Blues 206 for victory. Daniel Hughes got them off to a great start, 48 off 152. Dan Solway scoring 52 off 129, batting at 5. And there was a few starts here and there that got them over the line. And what a finish it was. You know, if you're watching that game, the live coverage kept showing the Blues dressing room with Harry Conway coming in at 11. Getting very nervous. He just couldn't sit still. He's not known for his batting, and it looked like he was going to have to rescue the Blues at the end. With the Blues needing about 10 runs with 2 wickets in hand. They managed to get to the total thanks to Nathan Lyon's boundary to square leg, or it might have been point actually, I believe, which got the scores level. But then there was a run out and we just couldn't believe it. Us watching at home, and my younger brother Ethan was getting very nervous, a massive Blues fan. But Harry Conway managed to block out 4 balls, and Sean Abbott managed to hit the winning run as the Blues won a thriller by just the 1 wicket. Taking a look back at the Queensland second innings, I forgot to mention Trent Copeland took a 5 wicket haul, bowled 18 overs, and just 17 runs from them. Yep, at an economy rate of 0.94. Just an unbelievable bowling performance from Trent Copeland. And he managed to get the wicket of Manus Labuschagne in both innings. But all we get is talking about is glory days. Well, it passes you by glory days. It's time now for Caleb's classic match. And today we'll be taking a trip down memory lane to the 2017 JLT One Day Cup. The match was played at Hurstville Oval between the Tasmanian Tigers and the Cricket Australia 11. Now, Tasmanian Tigers are my favourite team in the Sheffield Shield and currently in the One Day Cup. But at the time when this Cricket Australia 11 were featured in the One Day Cup, they took the place as my favourite team in the competition. So it was a battle between my two favourite teams, and the Tigers came out on top. It was quite a thrilling match, even though the scoreline doesn't suggest it. At times it was very even, and it was also an interesting match as Jackson Coleman and Dan Fallon's two fantastic men and players that we have interviewed on the Domestic Cricket Podcast in the past were both playing for the Cricket Australia 11 in the same side. So Tasmania batted first. George Bailey, top scoring with 126 off just 100 deliveries, 9 sixes and 9 boundaries. Fantastic from the Tassie skipper. Matthew Wade scored a 16 ball 39, striking at 243. And Ben Dunk opened the innings scoring 34 off 43, as well as Alex Doolan, who scored 83 off 95. A fantastic knock from Doolan. Cricket Australia 11 in the bowling. Henry Fortin took 2 for 79 off 10 overs. Jackson Coleman, our very good friend on the podcast, scored took the figures of 1 for 67 off 10 overs, bowling a maiden in there as well. Dan Fallon's registered his first List A wicket, getting the wicket of Ben Dunk with a fantastic delivery, and then did the double dab as a celebration, as he's known for. 1 for 51 off 7 overs he finished with. And Clint Hinchcliffe took 2 wickets. He was actually on a hat-trick with the last 2 balls of the Tasmanian innings, but unfortunately wasn't able to get the hat-trick with the amount of balls left, not suggesting that he had any chance to do so. He finished 2 for 51 off 8 overs. Cricket Australia 11 then batted, and in reply, Jake Carter opening the batting, scored 54 off 68, which was a fantastic knock. He top scored for the Cricket Australia 11. Bo Webster, the captain, couldn't make any runs, scoring 4 off 6. Clint Hinchcliffe batting at 4, scored 40 off 63. But coming in at number 10 and 11 respectively, Dan Fallon scored 17 off 14, hitting 2 sixes and a 4. Jackson Coleman then followed him, batting 11. Hitting 17 off just 12 deliveries, a 6 and a 4 for him, as the Cricket Australia 11 were bowled out for 220. And that's my classic match. Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up. Alrighty, time now for our second ever edition of Shake It Up, where one of the co-hosts decides on something they would like to change in either the Sheffield Shield or the Marsh One Day Cup competitions. Now, for Shake It Up, I want to bring back the ING Hit the Sign campaign. Obviously, ING are no longer the major sponsors of the One Day Cup, but The Hitting the Sign campaign, for those who don't know, was around in the early to mid-2000s, where if the batter hit a six and it hit the sign situated along the boundary fence in various parts of the ground, they would win, I think there was in some seasons a set prize money of 50,000, but in others it went up by 10,000 runs after each match. So obviously in the grand final, if no one had hit the sign yet, you could be looking at hitting the sign and getting, you know, 20 to 30K, depending on how many matches were played that season. Now I'd like to see this back, and obviously the coronavirus has had various economic impacts on Cricket Australia's funding, but instead of, you know, maybe in a couple of years' time when they have the money to do so, instead of the players receiving the cash prize, why don't we give the money to the struggling junior cricket clubs around each state? So whoever hits, whichever batsman hits a sign, they get to choose to give the money to a struggling junior cricket club in their respective state that they play for. I think that would be a great initiative. Get more people watching, get a lot more players interested in hitting sixes, which will result in, you know, more adventurous batting and better viewing. But I would like to see that return. It was a massive talking point in the One Day Cup. And, you know, if we bring that back, maybe we can bring back the respect of the public for the One Day Cup and, you know, return it to its former glory in a way. Yes, and it's that time of the episode again where we're joined by Mr. Niche, the owner of the famous Facebook page Niche Sporting Memes for Domestic One Day Cup Loving Teens. Now that's a mouthful, but Mr. Niche, fantastic to have you on the Domestic Cricket Podcast once again. And for your expert comments, I would like to know your views on Cricket Australia's, the amount of funding they give to the Big Bash. Is it too much? And are they neglecting the Sheffield Shield and the One Day Cup in the process of allocating these funds to the Big Bash?
Yeah, thanks for having me again, guys. Always a pleasure to join the podcast. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, you would have to say that given the circumstances facing governing bodies this year in sports across the world, not just in Australia, that you need to be looking at short-term financial gain. And if the Big Bash is the product that is set to deliver Cricket Australia more revenue and more profit than otherwise if they were to invest in the Sheffield Shield in the immediate short term, then by all means, that's if there's the business case. I note that just recently Cricket Australia has given the clubs the green light to actually have a third overseas import on their roster. And from what I understand, Cricket Australia is set to pay for that outside of the salary cap, which is actually quite extraordinary. Comes to the point whether the Big Bash is the same product as it was a few years ago. Probably not. The main reason that we still persist with the 14-game home and away season is largely due to Channel 7's TV rights, because we're not getting the crowds that we had a number of years ago. We're not having that sustained interest throughout the season as it drags on and on and on. I mean, you would naturally expect there to be some cuts to the domestic schedule in light of the pandemic. But going forward, I do think that there should be a greater emphasis on playing more Shield cricket at appropriate times in the year to not necessarily mirror the test schedule, but give the players a proper lead in. So potentially having the last round before the Big Bash break even push further closer to Christmas rather than ending in that first week of December. With regard to the One Day Cup, I think the issue there is for probably about 7 years now, they've played a majority of the games on these small suburban grounds. And while it can be a great spectacle for the couple hundred people who are actually interested in the competition, there was a big push from the Players Association to have more games played at different times throughout the year and to have more games played at the larger international grounds like MCG, SCG and Blundstone Arena. So, yes, Cricket Australia do need to prioritise the Sheffield Shield in the Marsh One Day Cup more when it comes to funding. But at the moment, I think they really need to be making the business case if they are to put more funding towards the Big Bash.
And with that, it brings a close to episode 6 of the Domestic Cricket Podcast for the 2020-2021 domestic cricket season. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, whether it's on YouTube or Podbean. And don't forget to check out our social medias for any latest developments, including who we've got next in our interviews. And also provide us with some feedback. If you have any feedback to give us, just message us on either Facebook or Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. Once again, thanks for joining us on the Domestic Cricket Podcast. We'll catch you next episode. Thank you for joining us on the Domestic Cricket Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at the Domestic Cricket Podcast and on Facebook. This has been another presentation by the Domestic Cricketers.